This is from chapter 47. Well, here it's listed as chapter 46. In the Krishna book. So Uddhava's come to solace the gopis. So Prabhupada states, one of the gopis, namely Srimati Radharani, was so much absorbed in thoughts of Krishna by dint of her personal touch with him that she actually began to talk with a bumblebee which was flying there and trying to touch her lotus feet. While another gopi was talking with Krishna's messenger, Uddhava, Srimati Radharani took that bumblebee to be a messenger from Krishna and began to talk with it as follows. Bumblebee, you are accustomed to drinking honey from the flowers, and therefore you have preferred to be a messenger of Krishna, which is of the same nature as you. I have seen on your mustaches the red powder of kumkum, which was smeared on the flower garland of Krishna while he was pressing the breast of some other girl who is my competitor. Beg your pardon? Oh. My competitor, you are feeling very proud by touching that flower, and your mustaches have become reddish. You have come here carrying a message for me. You are anxious to touch my feet, but my dear bumblebee, let me warn you, don't touch me! I don't want any messages from your unreliable master. You are the unreliable servant of an unreliable master. So Prabhupada comments, it may be that Srimati Radharani purposely addressed that bumblebee sarcastically in order to criticize the messenger Uddhava. Indirectly, Srimati Radharani saw Uddhava as not only resembling Krishna's bodily features, but as being equal to Krishna. In this way, she indicated that Uddhava was as unreliable as Krishna himself. So she's having a go at anyone and everything that reminds her of Krishna. Now, the Acharyas have described this as a kind of madness, but it's sort of a wonderful madness. Srimati Radharani wanted to give specific reasons why she was dissatisfied with Krishna and his messengers. So she goes on, your master Krishna is exactly of your quality. You sit down on a flower, and after taking a little honey, you immediately fly away and sit in another flower and taste. You're just like your master Krishna. He gives us the chance of tasting the touch of his lips and then left altogether. I know also that the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, who is always in the midst of the lotus flower, is constantly engaged in Krishna's service. But I do not know why she has become so captivated by Krishna. She is attached to him, although she knows his actual character. As far as we are concerned, we are more intelligent than the goddess of fortune. I just imagine some of the things she's saying are quite amazing. We are not going to be cheated anymore by Krishna or his messengers. Then she continues, you foolish bumblebee, you are trying to satisfy me and get a reward by singing the glories of Krishna, but it is a useless attempt. We are bereft of all our possessions. We are away from our homes and families. We know very well about Krishna. We know even more than you. So, whatever you make up about him will be old stories to us. So, whatever you make up about him, she says old stories. Krishna is now in the city and is better known as the friend of Arjuna. He now has many new girlfriends, and they are no doubt very happy in association with him. Because the lusty burning sensations of their breasts have been satisfied by Krishna, they are now happy. If you go there and glorify Krishna, they may be pleased to reward you. You're just trying to pacify me by your behavior as a flatterer, and therefore you have put your head under my feet. But I know the trick which you are trying to play. I know that you are a messenger coming from a great trickster, Krishna. Therefore, please leave me. I can understand that you are very expert in reuniting two opposing parties. But at the same time, you must know that I cannot place my reliance upon you, nor upon your master, Krishna. We left our families, husbands, children, and relatives only for Krishna, and yet he did not feel any obligation in exchange. He has left us for lost. Do you think we can place our faith in him again? We know that Krishna cannot be long without the association of young women. That is his nature. He is finding difficulty in Mathura because he is no longer in the village among innocent coward girls. He is in the aristocratic society and must be feeling difficulty in making friendships with the young girls. Perhaps you have come here to canvass again or to take us there. Kind of hopeful note there. But why should Krishna expect us to return there? He is greatly qualified to entice all other girls, not only in Vrindavan or Mathura, but all over the universe. His wonderful, enchanting smile is so attractive, and the movement of his eyebrows so beautiful, that he can call for any woman from the heavenly, middle, or plutonic planets. Mahalakshmi, the greatest of all goddesses of fortune, also hankers to render him some service. In comparison to all these women of the universe, what are we? We are very insignificant. So just see, she's hurtling back and forth from condemning Krishna and talking about how badly he feels that she feels that he's treated the gopis. Then she goes on to say how wonderful he is, that he can attract everyone everywhere. What are we? We're insignificant. So she goes back and forth. She goes on to say, Krishna advertises himself as very magnanimous, and he is praised by great saints. His qualifications could be perfectly utilized if he would only show us mercy, because we are downtrodden and neglected by him. Actually, in one part of the Bhagavatam, the gopis and Radharani are describing themselves as homeless, that because of their attachment to Krishna, their reputation is not great anymore, and they're despondent and depressed and just in a hopeless state. But here she goes on to say, we are downtrodden and neglected by him. You poor messenger, you are only a less intelligent servant. You do not know much about Krishna, how ungrateful and hard-hearted he has been, not only in this life, but in his previous lives also. Now, it's interesting because there's only 10 verses in the Brahmara Gita, and yet Prabhupada writes page after page after page about this conversation and kind of drawing in explanation, statements by the acharyas, writing in an inspired, realized way about this feelings of Radharani. She goes on to say, you do not know much about Krishna, how ungrateful and hard-hearted he has been, not only in this life, but in his previous lives also. We have all heard this from our grandmother, Parnamasi. She has informed us that Krishna was born in a Kshatriya family previous to this birth and was known as Ramachandra. In that birth, instead of killing Vali, an enemy of his friend, in the manner of a Kshatriya, he killed him just like a hunter. A hunter takes a secure hiding place and then kills an animal without facing it. So Lord Ramachandra, as a Kshatriya, should have fought with Vali face to face, but instigated by his friend, he killed him from behind a tree. Thus he deviated from the religious principles of a Kshatriya. Well, she's giving it to him with both barrels here. She's really criticizing. Also, he was so attracted by the beauty of Sita that he converted Sripanika, the sister of Ravana, into an ugly woman by cutting off her nose and ears. Sripanika proposed an intimate relationship with him, and as a Kshatriya, he should have satisfied her. But he was so selfish that he could not forget Sita Devi and converted Sharpanaka into an ugly woman. Before that birth as a Kshatriya, he took his birth as a Brahmana boy known as Vamanadev and asked charity from Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj was so magnanimous that he gave him whatever he had, yet Krishna, as Vamanadev, ungratefully arrested him just like a crow and pushed him down to the Patala kingdom. We know all about Krishna and how ungrateful he is, but here is the difficulty. Now she's going to express what the real problem is, now that she's really given him a good basting. She says, in spite of his being so cruel and hard-hearted, it is very difficult for us to give up talking about him. Not only were you unable to give up this talk, but great sages and saintly persons are also engaged in talking about him. We gopis of Vrindavan do not want to make any more friendships with this blackish boy, but we do know how we shall be. We do not know how we shall be able to give up remembering and talking about his activities. In my opinion, one should not hear about Krishna. Because as soon as a drop of the nectar of his transcendental activities is poured into the ear, one immediately rises above the platform of duality, attraction, and rejection. Being completely freed from the attraction of material attachment, one gives up the attachment for this material world, family, home, wife, children, and everything which is materially dear to every person. Being dispossessed of all material acquisition, one makes his relatives and himself unhappy. Then he wanders in search of Krishna, either as a human being or another species of life, even as a bird. It is very difficult to actually understand Krishna, his name, his quality, his form, his pastimes, his paraphernalia, and his entourage. It says Radharani continued to speak to the black messenger of Krishna. Please do not talk any more about Krishna. It is better to talk about something else. We are already doomed, like the black-spotted she-deer in the forest who are enchanted by the sweet musical vibration of the hunter. In the same way, we have been enchanted by the sweet words of Krishna, and again we are thinking of the rays of the nails of his toes. We are becoming more and more lustful for his association. Therefore, I request you not to talk of Krishna anymore. Then Prabhupada writes a very insightful comment. He says, the talk of Radharani with the bumblebee messenger and her accusing Krishna and at the same time her inability to give up talking about him are symptoms of the topmost transcendental ecstasy called Mahabhava. The ecstatic Mahabhava manifestation is possible only in the persons of Radharani and her associates. Great acharyas like Srila Rupa Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur have analyzed these Mahabhava speeches of Srimati Radharani, and they have described the different sentiments such as udgurna, bewilderment, jalpa, pratijalpa, talking in different ways. In Radharani is found the science of ujula, or the brightest jewel or love of God. While Radharani was talking with the bee, and the bee was flying hither and thither, it all of a sudden disappeared from her sight. So now the bee disappears. And then she begins to get upset. She was in full mourning due to separation from Krishna and was feeling ecstasy by talking with the bee. She's talking with the bee, and I just consider that. But in the spiritual world, anything's possible. But as soon as the bee disappeared, she became almost mad, thinking that the messenger bee might have returned to Krishna to inform him all about her talking against him. Oh no, she's thinking, oh no, what have I done? Krishna must have been very sorry to hear it, she thought. In this way, she was very much overwhelmed with another type of ecstasy. So even in her lamentation, she's ecstatic. She's ecstatic talking about Krishna, she's ecstatic trying not to talk of Krishna, she's ecstatic accusing Krishna, left-wing gopi, She's ecstatic in every possible circumstance. So in the meantime, the bee came back. Bee came back, appeared again. She thought, Krishna is still kind to me. In spite of the messenger carrying disruptive messages, he is so kind that he has again sent the bee to take me to him. Srimati Radharani was very careful this time not to say anything against Krishna. So now she's changing her transcendental tactics. My dear friend, I welcome you, she said. Krishna is so kind that he has again sent you. Krishna is so kind and affectionate to me that he has sent you back, fortunately, in spite of your carrying my message against him. My dear friend, you can ask for me whatever you want. I shall give you anything because you are so kind upon me. You have come to take me to Krishna because he is not able to come here. He is surrounded by new girlfriends in Mathura, but you are a tiny creature. How can you take me there? How will you be able to help me in meeting Krishna while he is taking rest there along with the goddess of fortune, embracing her to his chest? Never mind. Let us forget all these things about my going there or sending you. Please let me know how Krishna is faring in Mathura. Tell me if he still remembers his foster father, Nanda Maharaj, his affectionate mother, Jashoda, his cowherd friends, and his poor friends like us, the gopis. I am sure that he must sometimes sing about us. We served him just like maidservants without any payment. Is there any possibility that Krishna will again come back and place his arms around us? His limbs are always fragrant with the Aguru's scent. Please put all these inquiries to Krishna. Uddhava was standing near, and he heard Srimati Radharani talking in this way, as if she had become almost mad after Krishna. He was exceedingly surprised at how the gopis were accustomed to think of Krishna constantly in that topmost ecstasy of Mahabhava love. He had brought a message in writing from Krishna, and now he wanted to present it before the gopis just to pacify them. He said, my dear gopis, your mission of human life is now successful. You are all wonderful devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, you are eligible to be worshipped by all kinds of people. You are worshipable throughout the three worlds because your minds are wonderfully absorbed in the thought of Vasudeva, Krishna. He is the goal of all kinds of pious activities and ritualistic performances, such as giving in charity, rigidly following the austerity of vows, undergoing severe penances, and igniting the fire of sacrifice. He is the purpose behind the chanting of different mantras, the reading of the Vedas, controlling the senses, and concentrating the mind in meditation. These are some of the many different processes of self-realization and attainment of perfection of life. But actually, they are only meant for realizing Krishna and dovetailing oneself in the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the last instruction of Bhagavad Gita also. Although there are descriptions of different kinds of processes of self-realization, at the end, Krishna recommended one should give up everything and simply surrender unto him. All other processes are meant for teaching one how to surrender ultimately unto the lotus feet of Krishna. The Bhagavad Gita also says that this surrendering process is completed by a sincere person executing the process of self-realization in wisdom and austerity after many births. So he's just congratulating himself at this point. He's congratulating them about the exalted position of Krishna. And then he goes on to deliver the specific message of Krishna. He says, these are the words from the Personality of Godhead. Ultimately, what Krishna had to say is that I've done what I can for you, really. I've separated myself from you so you can't forget me. I can't do more than that. I mean, essentially, that's his message. And it's it's kind of what's the, I don't know what the right the word is. Emotionally speaking, it's kind of poignant. I think at least poignant. It's very heartbreaking in a way, but at the same time, it's very ecstatic. It's like saying, "You'll never be able to forget me. This, you'll never be able to forget me, and this is the greatest mercy I can possibly bestow." So this is the. And Prabhupada, in this chapter, Deliverance of the Message of Krishna to the Gopis, he writes an immense chapter on these 10 verses, you know, explaining the whole thing. And this is actually quite important because there's another aspect I wanted to bring out. Although this particular pastime of Radharani speaking to a bumblebee is very popular for the Bhagavad reciters in India and other places. And people, you know, listen to these sentiments of Srimati Radharani, and they sort of equate them with ordinary mundane sentiments. They don't understand in the way that Rupa Goswami in the Ujjala Nilamani, he comments on each one of those 10 verses by Radharani at some length, explaining exactly what her transcendental mentality was. So then in this book that I've compiled, this is about Gaurakishore, and his some of his followers came to him. So it says, a learned caste Goswami delivered a discourse on the Brahmara Gita, Shri Radha's soliloquy to a bumblebee. I think we call it a soliloquy, like in Shakespeare, we have soliloquies. So this is considered like a soliloquy, 10 verses. And so someone was delivering a discourse on this in Navadvip. Said after he'd lectured for a couple of days, someone informed Babaji Maharaj, meaning Gaurakishore, that his discourses were excellent and that no one had ever heard such devout discourses before. Hearing this, Babaji Maharaj replied like this. Now, Babaji Maharaj, Gaurakishore, was basically illiterate. He spoke very well, but many times the way he expressed himself was put into more refined language by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He tells most of these stories in his own recounting of Gaurakishore. But he says, here's what he's replied. In essence, don't go to hear that discourse on Brahmara Gita again. Listen. When there is rain, weeds grow very quickly. Carefully planted seeds can also grow, but some are destroyed prematurely by a heavy downpour. By hearing a discourse about Krishna and his pastimes, the seeds of love for Krishna bud forth in the heart of those persons who are pure, devoid of material desires, and sincerely dedicated to the service of the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas. Those in whom the seed of lust is found, however, will immediately become lustful upon hearing the sportive pastimes of Sri Radha Krishna. In other words, he's saying that these people that are getting all excited hearing about the Brahmara Gita in the wrong mood of seeing them almost like mundane activities. He says, by pretentiously hearing the pastimes of Radha Krishna, their lust becomes inflamed, he says. The consciousness of the conditioned living being is covered by lust, and thus they take the transcendental pastimes of Radha Govinda to be the libidinous exploits of a mundane hero and heroine. So like a character in a novel, in other words, or a soap opera or something like that. They're dragging it down to the level of human interaction and thinking that it's the same. He says, those who assume that because they have faith in the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, they are able to experience the transcendental nature of those pastimes. They are unaware of their own carnal desires, being overwhelmed by the illusory energy. It means, in other words, they're going to be baffled by their own desires, lusty desires. It says, you can understand from their utterances whether the pastimes are transcendental or whether they have proper regard for those pastimes. So then somebody in the assembly who's been going to these talks spoke up and said, well, I saw that some members of the audience who were listening to the Brahmāra Gītā cried out in spiritual ecstasy. And some wept, saying, oh, Krishna, oh, Radha. Babaji Maharaj replied, it was not spiritual ecstasy, but rather the madness born of lust. This kind of deviation will cause the ruin of the world. So heavy. You have come to know of their so-called ecstasy by seeing them weep. He who has no love for himself, how can he get love of God through the display of Maya? If someone has truly achieved love of God, then request him to leave his home and family. He should come to the banks of the Ganges, renounce such gratification, and take shelter of honest, non-duplicitous bhajan. If we observe him performing this austerity for 1 year, then we will know the true extent of his eagerness to hear Brahmāra Gītā. This is kind of like Gorkhasura's test. I mean, and I think this is also the explanation of why Prabhupada spent so much time on this chapter. And of course, I haven't read all of it because it's a very long chapter. But he explains in depth, you know, how the acharyas have analyzed these sentiments, these activities, and even more so in the Bhagavatam purports. They're citing Rupa Goswami's Ujjala Nilamani, which he explains all the feelings, what they indicate in terms of ecstatic love of God, separation. These things are seen in a completely spiritual light. And anyone can read this book because Prabhupada explains everything in such depth and so completely. So therefore, we shouldn't be like the other attendees of the Brahmāra Gītā, who Gorkhasura was very critical of. And he was critical because he knew, first of all, the person reciting these pastimes was materialistic. The people hearing it had a very material attitude and outlook. And so he's saying this is not, it's not helpful. Unless it's properly presented by the acharyas, it's best not to hear these things. So we know that Prabhupada was always against this Bhagavad Sapta. Never a fan of it. Well, that's just being sarcastic, I guess. He was not a fan. He was very irritated by anyone who thought that this was linking with real spirituality to go to these Bhagavad Saptas. Now, also, just should have a mention that today is Srivas Thakur's appearance day. Now, it says in the calendars that Srivas Pandit, well, same person. Srivas Thakur, Srivas Pandit, both the same person. Sometimes people get it mixed up between Srinivas Acharya, Srivas Pandit. You know, it's Srivas Pandit or Srivas Thakur. His appearance day, and in his house, he was married to another great devotee named Malini, who was the mother of Vrindavan Das Thakur. So the great personalities, but in that home is where the Sankirtan mission began, nocturnal kirtan, in the home of Srivas Thakur. So today's an important day in that respect, that it's because it's, of course, Srivas Thakur was Narada Muni. I understand that someone's giving a talk about Srivas later today, is that right? Okay. When is that?
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock this evening, if you want to hear.
Festival starts probably 4:30.
4:30. So, okay. So, festival begins at 4:30, and then the talk is at 6. Is that right?
At 5:30. The class is at 5:30.
Class is at 5:30. We've got the lowdown now. So, yes. Yeah, so, if you want to hear a lot about Srivas Thakur, I mean, he's a wonderful devotee. I mean, he's amongst the devotees that preceded the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He came. Haridas Thakur came, Advaita Acharya came, Nityananda Prabhu came. So many people appeared prior to Lord Chaitanya's appearance, you know, who were there to take part in his amazing pastimes. So to hear more and more about Srivas Thakur, you get that chance later on today. So now we have a couple of minutes. You can ask a question. I don't know whether I'll be able to answer it or not, but I'll try if there is any questions. Oh, this is fantastic. No, it's not obligatory. You don't have to ask a question. Okay, go. Go on, you must know how to do this. You're an expert.
Thank you, Puri. Have a nice class. So if somebody was here, like, as a beginner for the first time today, and they were hearing about Radharani, who's Krishna's partner, and she's angry and mad, how would you explain to them that this is something that we're aspiring for, or this is our goal, or this is the highest perfection of
Well, I would have a couple of approaches. One is I would say, if you want to understand more about this, you can read this book here. At chapter 47 of this book, it'll explain everything in some detail. And any questions you have about that, you can ask me afterwards. But, you know, it's a fact that some people hearing this may be bewildered. It's true. I think that one has to understand the position of the gopis as being Krishna's eternal consorts. They're not just ordinary village women, although they portray themselves as such. They're actually Radharani, and all of her expansions are the feminine counterparts of Krishna in the spiritual kingdom. So these sentiments of love, a very elevated kind of love, is not like ordinary mundane characteristics of what we call love or lust. So it would be difficult to explain it in the short term unless they're actually interested. One thing I've found is any time answering a question or a challenge about is it mundane or is it spiritual, you have to see how serious the person is who's asking the question. In other words, they have to have something more than just idle curiosity, because these are deep topics, and they can be explained in detail and in great philosophical style, but a person has to be willing to hear it. So I think that's another element to consider, is how serious that person is asking the question. If they're not serious, then you can just tell them, well, it's beyond your present understanding, but you can find out more about it if you're serious, if you're really interested. It's kind of ecstasy. It's not madness. It's not real anger. It's something more refined and amazing than that. Something like that. I mean, that's a rough form of a question. Go ahead.
Can I mention something?
Yeah. Hold on.
There's chapter 4 in the Adalila, where Krishna discusses his internal reasons of ecstatic love. And it's a very, very, very wonderful thing. The more they see each other, the more they want each other. But when they're together and when they're separated, that's the internal reasons. And it's chapter 4 in the Adi Leela, if you read that. And it's very funny as well.
So we'll refer them to chapter 4 then?
Yeah, of the Adi Leela.
Adi Leela, okay.
Yeah.
And, thank you.
There's a series of exchanges there. That's very nice. I always remember that one. Mm. Okay.
So all these things can be, in other words, they can be explained, but then I remember when Prabhupada was talking to John Lennon and Yoko Ono when we first met, and they were asking these different questions, and finally, I don't know, Yoko Ono asked some question about the afterlife or something. And Prabhupada said, well, he said, for that you have to become a serious student. And she became really upset. Well, what do you mean serious? You know, and she didn't like the implication that she wasn't serious. But Bhaktisiddhanta also said something to that. He was having a conversation with a professor called Professor Suthers from Ohio I don't know if it's Ohio State or Ohio Wesleyan or something, university professor. And he was asking him questions, and he became very excited about the philosophy that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was expressing. And so he said, please tell me more about these things. And Bhaktisiddhanta said, well, same answer basically. Well, for that you'll have to become a serious student. And the professor immediately dropped the question. He didn't pursue it any further because he knew what a serious type of character Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was. I think that that's an important point in presenting philosophy to anyone, is to get a gauge of their seriousness, of their intense desire to know. I remember years ago, someone came to our temple in Florida and began asking questions. You know, when you read Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers, he asked all the right questions, you know, and Prabhupada gave all these fantastic answers. So this person had serious questions. And somehow when somebody asks you a really serious question, you know, that shows some depth and true curiosity and desire to know, then you get sort of a slight empowerment to answer the question, even though you know you're just an ignorant fool. But somehow you get some power to answer those questions. And he became so enlivened with every answer that he later became a devotee, and he later became the president of the Gainesville Temple. And he was just a very deeply inquisitive person, and that's sort of what's required to really go deeply into these topics. I'm kind of avoiding his question in a way, I suppose. But I'm trying to give a little bit of context to it. So anything else at all? I know that our time is up, at least my time is up. There's no way I'm going to speak anyway till 9 o'clock. Anybody?
I was just thinking the Shikshashtagam prayers, which is basically the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness, all in one place. You know, Chaito Dharpana Marjanam Mahavamaha Nadahanam Najanam Nasum.
Yeah, yeah, but the only thing of, yeah. Yes, but.
Finally, it's the last verse, Asdisya
Vahabhadam. Then you have to hear the. It's one thing to hear the prayers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but to understand them. To understand them means you have to read the commentaries of the acharyas, and they're quite extensive. Yeah. Bhaktivinoda has written an amazing commentary on Shikshashtak. Prabhupada has written a wonderful commentary on the Shikshashtaka. Yeah. It has to be understood through the medium of the acharyas.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah.
Because it may be all in one place, but it's like a sutra. We say Atato Ramagigyasa, for instance. What does that mean? Well, there's volumes have been written about those few words to understand them. This question over here.
Yeah. Hare Krishna. Yeah, just in answer to Prabhu's question, what I would say is that what we see here is demonstrating simply that God is a person, and that he has, as people do, has relationships with other people. And so Krishna has all kinds of relationships. You know, some people are his friends, some people are his lovers, some people are his servants. And so what we're seeing here is this relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with his supreme consort. And there's a lot of drama, just like there always is between male and female relationships.
Well, that's good.
And it's transcendental.
Yeah, but I think it depends, again, on who's inquiring, you know, how much they can handle. I think that has to be determined first, how to answer any question. Mm-hmm. It's got to be specific to that person asking the question. Because otherwise, you know, some people they can't take much. I'll give them a little. Or someone really serious, I'll give them more. God's a person, they're also persons, but it seems like having a loving relationship with God, if we go by Radharani's talks here, is pretty depressing. You know, if you looked at it strictly in a material way, you'd think, oh my gosh, I want nothing to do with that person. He deserts you, he leaves you, he makes you suffer. You know, you've give up everything for him and then he just deserts you. And, you know, her heart is broken, apparently. And she's gone mad. You know, if you looked at it strictly in a mundane way. So, again, it's like having the right view based on authoritative scripture and acharyas. CJ? That's Chaitanya Jivan. I call him CJ. I think a lot of people call him CJ.
Thank you, Rupa, for a nice class. And I don't wish to compare it, as you say, to the mundane relationships that we have, but I can't help but thinking that, yes, we have come here to imitate Radharani and Krishna, and we do see it in relationships as the drama, that the general experience of relationships is that neither can please each other, neither neither understand each other, and they do put each other down in the name of wanting to be close, but at the same time, that separation always, and I've noticed it myself, whenever you're separated, you tend to then start to feel more closer again.
Sometimes. Absence makes the heart grow, makes the heart grow fonder, and then, or less so.
And then the moment you're actually back together, everything sort of goes flat again. So
I think the difference is, you know, you could say then, from a superficial point of view, well, it's just like the material world, you know, all this anger and irritation and desertion and behavior that's upsetting, but they're in ecstasy during all of this. Now, who can understand that? Without becoming a purified soul, who can understand the ecstasy of Srimati Radharani? Even in her accusing Krishna, she loves it. She, you know, like, you know, that Radha Kund story, I don't know if you know that, where she kind of accuses him of being a killer of the bull, Aristasura. Was it Aristasura? I think it was Aristasura. And, you know, she's saying, I don't want anything, I don't want you to touch anything. You're contaminated. She loves saying stuff like that to Krishna. It's a kind of ecstasy. Now, in the material world, when there's a big argument between a couple, there's nothing very ecstatic about any of it. In fact, it's generally miserable. Now, sometimes when there's separation and then, again, being brought back together again, you could say, well, there's a kind of happiness there. Oh, we're together again. Everything's going to be fine. But then it isn't. Or it may become tolerable. In relationships, we have to learn to tolerate each other, basically. There may be initially some loving feelings that goes just so far on the bodily platform, and then there's a disagreement, many kinds of disagreement, and then there's, if you're smart, you learn how to tolerate each other and serve each other. You know that story? I'll tell one story about Gaurakishore because it's funny, I think. Of a disciple of Bhaktivinoda's decided to get married. They got married. And then he approached Bhaktisiddhanta, who he was taking instruction from, and said, now I've gotten married. Do you think there'll be any difficulty in my practicing Krishna consciousness? And Bhaktisiddhanta, in essence, replied, oh, you're not going to have much luck with that. You know, you're married, you'll have problems. That was his basic answer at the time. He was quite young at the time. So, but he said, but let's go and speak to my spiritual master, see what he has to say. So they approached Gaurakishore. And in essence, Gaurakishore said, oh, this, it's not a problem that so-and-so has become married. He said, you should, speaking to the man, he said, you should cook nice food stuff and offer it and then serve your wife, seeing her as a Vaishnavi and worthy of your worship. And in that way, there'll be no difficulty in your life. So in other words, become a servant and you'll be okay. have the mentality of a servant. So that would be his. That was his idea of a solution to marital difficulties. Rather than seeing yourself, I'm the master, I tell my wife what to do. Cook this, do this. Well, that doesn't usually work out too well. Or it has a tendency to create some kind of resentments. So one has to become expert servant. That's our business as Vaishnavas, to become servants of each other. So that was the solution that Gaur Kishore gave to marital problems. Anyway, that's a different topic, in Radharani's case, it's just ecstasy from one end to the other. No matter the circumstances, she's feeling ecstatic in separation. She's ecstatic in meeting. But more ecstatic actually in separation, even more so. Now, how do we understand that one? Oh, I feel so much better when you're not around. Actually, though, my wife told me that one time. But, you know, that's just the way it is, you know, that we have to learn to tolerate each other. That's the trick. If any of you are grihasthas, tolerance. That's the way to proceed. There can be affection, there can be love. But the main thing is to serve. To serve and be tolerant. Well, it's nice that so many of you showed up. Sorry I couldn't give a better class. I had something else to... But anyway, thank you for your attendance. If there's any final question, I'll certainly listen to it. But I think... Uh-oh, there's more questions. Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Hare Krishna. Thank you. So I have a question, but don't know very much how to ask it properly or how to put it, so excuse me, please. I was thinking, can we understand that Krishna is exposing, performing these all conjugal pastimes in order that we as a bhakti yogis or as a devotees, a meditation can be of the purest rank? For example, we can see jnana yogis, impersonalists, they're trying to get free of these thoughts of conjugal affairs between men and women. So can you please explain to me how to understand that we are trying to get free of this and then our object of meditation are these conjugal pastimes?
Well, I think we have some preliminary things to focus on. Understanding the intricacies of Radha Krishna Leela is very elevated. It's not a thing for a beginner or a new person, relatively new. I mean, I consider myself a neophyte, and certainly I have to try to be very respectful in reading these things because I'm not on that platform. So I think, but what we can be very focused on is chanting the holy name and rendering service. Those things we can be kept purified. And hearing about, you can hear these things. Hearing is also a purificatory exercise. You know, you just by hearing the Shastra, you become more increasingly purified. But if you tend to put all your focus on Radha Krishna Leela, then that may be difficult unless you get purified first. In other words, by chanting and by following sadhana bhakti and by rendering service to the Sankirtan movement, then as you get more and more purified, then these topics will be relishable. But at this stage, they're just bewildering. I think for most people, it's bewildering. Because we tend to equate them with mundane affairs, and they're not mundane affairs. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, as you said, Prabhupada, that the Krishna's pastimes, they are bewildering. And even the creator of this universe, he became bewildered with Krishna's pastimes when he saw Krishna with the cowherd boys there. He said, it cannot be God. Yeah.
So, nice.
And he is the creator of the universe.
Yes.
How we can understand Krishna's pastimes.
That's a great point, yeah. That If Brahma's bewildered, what to speak of us? Yes. We understand as much whatever our capacity is, you know, whatever our level of purification is, whatever our level of realization is, we may understand. But hearing these things, that's all right. The hearing process in and of itself is purifying. So it doesn't mean we should give up hearing, but I think like Jagannath Das Babaji used to say, that the real focus is the avatar of the age that you live in. So our focus is more on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Chaitanya's Kali Yuga avatar. And what did he teach? Basically, in essence, for the mass, he didn't talk intricate pastimes of Radha and Krishna. That was only for certain very elevated personalities. What did he stress on was Sankirtan, chanting the holy name. That was his whole stress for ordinary. And we, if we're humble enough to consider ourselves ordinary persons, that's our main focus, the holy name. And also, I want to just say something. This is, since I have a bigger audience than usual, chanting the Panchatattva mantra, very important. And I've noticed that a lot of kirtaniyas, they don't do it these days. They start with Hare Krishna. No. There are many, many purports in Chaitanya Charitamrita and otherwise explaining that our entry into the holy name is had by chanting the Panchatattva mantra. That's our access to Hare Krishna mantra, is Panchatattva mantra, the avatar of this age. And this is another thing, just for some idle information for everyone. Not idle, but the Panchatattva mantra itself was developed by Jagannath Das Babaji. And it had different forms initially, slightly different forms, but the one we chant now is the one Prabhupada authorized for us. But so this, and he always emphasized Kali Yuga avatar, Lord Chaitanya, that's where our stress should be, Lord Chaitanya and the holy name. That's our focus. We're not focusing except in, once we're in a very purified condition, we can start focusing on Radha Krishna Leela. Or we can read about it in Krishna book or the Bhagavatam book, where things are carefully explained. But I think our main focus is service and chanting. Anyway, I think that's good enough, isn't it? Did anybody else? Oh, you had a question. Okay, go ahead.
Hare Krishna. In terms of hearing those very confidential pastimes, from time to time we see in our movement also, or those ex who were before in our movement, there this seems to me genuine desire to hear these topics. We cannot say it's lust or something. It's just generally your heart tells them. They said, when you're ready, you're ready. You just won't. But we attempt to flag them as either sahajiyas or not genuine, or those who want intellectually to step into Goswami's books, and by this intellectual understanding, they hope that they will gonna come to that level which is above the average of ISKCON devotee. So I'm just wondering, what is measuring stick to really understand their perhaps genuinity to hear this, and also. I just lost my thought, but in also how to prevent ourselves to step forward, to flag them as a with negative connotations, because very often, because they are not facilitated, they are flagged as a bad or something negative, they go somewhere else where they find a person from whom they will hear such a pastime, so they will be facilitated, open, and they leave the movement. So in that sense, what do you think? What's that measure?
I think I get the essence. We don't want to judge others, but for ourselves, we have to know when. You'll have to judge for yourself whether you're purified enough to hear these things in the right spirit. I think we can't judge another person. We don't know. That's the interesting thing about this movement, isn't it, really? We don't know who we are. I don't know. This may be some. I mean, I know this man, but But I don't really know who he really is. You know, who he might be someone very exalted that I've been offending for years. But the point is, in other words, not being judgmental about other people's activities, but find fault with ourselves and see whether we think we're ready to hear these things in a very kind of exclusive way, I think.
You think like it's kind of proper approach to judge their character, to see how, like, you have to know him.
Yeah, it's better not to get into judgment at all. Yeah.
I mean, like, not judge, but they just calculate or estimate according to how they behave, how is their life is. Because something must be there, otherwise you will not be able to prevent yourself to comment.
Well, I think, Gaur Kishore was a very highly elevated personality, but he was very critical of people who were busy talking about, you know, Radha Krishna Leela and having sex with somebody on the side and smoking and doing various other... In other words, the real test, I would say there is a test in terms of behavior. You know, if you just talk the talk but don't walk the walk, then... But we have to judge ourselves like that. I think the main thing is to judge your own character, not judge other people's characters. We may have our opinions, but we don't have to express them just because we have one. And a lot of times we get that, you know, that devotees are very inclined to give their they give their opinions about others, but really, Bhaktisiddhanta said, "Don't fault find with others. Find faults with yourself." So that's our proper inclination for us, I think. Okay.
Isn't that why Prabhupada gave the Krishna book? So, in a nutshell, the people would read it like bedtime reading, and they'd get an instant condensed relationship with the whole Bhagavatam and Krishna books. The really good one, and on Bhaktivedanta Vedic Library, you can hear about it, all the pastimes, just by listening to the verses only, not the purport or anything like that. So Bhaktivedanta Vedic Library is a good way of getting to know Krishna, just by hearing about it,
hearing is essential.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much, Hare Krishna.